The next point, then, is to bear in mind the simple purpose of nature. Nature producing human beings produces them as the result of energy having set up within the unfolding structure of humanity its natural processes, and these processes are followed through what we call generation. But the energy moving through these processes moves through all of them and is like one tremendous stream breaking up and descending through the branches of families, of races, of sub-races, of types, and of subtypes. And this streaming life that is continually flowing into manifestation is evolving in its own way. And evolution is a twofold process, of which the first process is the ideation or emanation over a vast area of a principle of energy. This principle, having locked within itself the archetypal fulfillment of its own nature, in this case, the fulfillment of its own purpose. Now, what is the conceivable purpose of this energy? Apparently, the purpose is this, that under the term energy, we are conceiving of something for which we can have little accurate understanding. We think of energy primarily as force. We think of energy as an energizing agent. But philosophy thinks of it in a much larger way. Philosophy thinks of it in the term of a synonym for pure life, and that life contains within it all that is living. Therefore, this energy is not merely a Freudian generating energy. This energy has generation as one of its powers. Plato and Pythagoras assumed that this energy had 8 powers. Actually, in all probability, this would only be a classification of the most obvious factors recognizable by man, because the powers of energy are probably limitless, beyond calculation. But this energy contains locked within itself also the seeds of life as conscious experience. It contains within itself consciousness, intelligence, and force. It carries within itself every faculty, power, and dimension of our comprehension, and also innumerable extra faculties beyond anything that we know at the moment. And we only can assume that energy carries within it total consciousness. That this total consciousness is an infinite capacity to become more conscious. That this infinite capacity to become more conscious must theoretically end in something. I think Buddha was working upon this same concept when he intimated that the ultimate of consciousness, so to say, is a nirvanic totality, a suspension of all imperfection, an outgrowing of all limitation, and that the end is therefore free consciousness in space. To achieve this end, then, we must assume that consciousness from a seed is growing until it completes itself by becoming all conscious in all condition, place, space, and dimension. To achieve this inconceivable purpose, therefore, consciousness locked in energy is continuously manifesting. Energy creates through generational processes forms. These forms, according to their orders, their degrees of development, and the central nervous system which develops in them, become instruments for the manifestations of fragmentary parts of consciousness. Therefore, we may also point out that all activity in itself bears witness to some degree of consciousness. When, for example, the little rabbit is a baby and does not know what to do, it follows its mother's tail, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to do. When the tail comes up, the rabbit sits up. When the tail goes down, the rabbit hides and huddles to the earth, because these are what it has learned to be the way of salvation. This is an expression of consciousness. Years ago, a hunter pointed out something that was very interesting, that a wild deer in its native state, if attacked by an animal, will run to a man, even though the man has a gun. Why? Because the animal instinctively recognizes that man has superior intelligence. This is a form of consciousness, intuitive. Everywhere in nature, consciousness exists. It takes a certain degree of consciousness for things merely to continue of themselves. It takes consciousness to allow a monocellular organism to merely exist. It takes more consciousness where motion comes in. It takes more consciousness where self-survival moves in. But everywhere there is consciousness. And this consciousness is everywhere being released through the degrees of organisms perpetuated by the generational process. Thus, the human being, by generation, produces a type of organism in which a consciousness, which we call human consciousness, can exist, can function. Now, with the number of human beings that exist, with their different degrees of development, differing degrees lying backward through the descent of what is called bloodline, which is nothing but tube for energy, we have an infinite diversity of specializations of human consciousness among human beings. We have lower forms of life in which some degrees of consciousness are more specialized than in us. We have many variations upon the theme of consciousness, but we may say that consciousness is a kind of awakening by means of which a kind of awareness increases in life, attaining finally to the hypothetical condition of self-awareness, which we call man. Thus we have, in this descending energy, we have the rudiment, we have the substance or the essence of all that energy implies. Namely, that energy implies not only growth and motion and survival, perpetuation, but it also implies mentation, the enrichment of emotional content, the love of beauty, art, music, the power of philosophy and reason, the highest sciences and most exact phases which we now associate with mind. For mind is only a name that we give to a subtle organism for the distribution of a certain phase of universal energy. And this universal energy, differentiated upon a prism of mental process, becomes what we call mental energy. All of this is leading us gradually to the point where we have to recognize that there is moving through us all the time a kind of life that has as its ultimate goal the complete revelation of itself. Now, in every human being and in every form known to man, this revelation is incomplete. In all nature, studied together, we become aware of an infinitely larger variation of revelation. We see revelation as small flowers growing out of the earth. We see revelation in the industry of the ant and the bee. We see revelation in the fruitfulness of living things and in the magnificent productions of human ingenuity. These things, however, in no way exhaust revelation. We see revelation as religious experience, producing all the religions that we know, but still locked within it are all the religions that have not yet come. But these new things, because the motion of energy is orderly, each one of these new organisms arises from previous organisms. And even in the most abstract of theological institutions, religion is perpetuated by generation, by the mingling and mixing of previous concepts and the revelation of a new degree of religious energy. So our central fountain of energy is all things unto all things. And in the processes of its own motion or development, it is constantly flowing into the structures and forms which it generates. Now, in nature, there doesn't seem to be anything that very seriously gets in the way of process. But with man, there is a certain difference in this. And we behold or observe that it is possible for this energy's process to come into conflict with the organisms which it creates. If these organisms fail to fulfill their appointed tasks, then they inhibit or limit or restrict the motion of energy. And we know, as Paracelsus has pointed out, that nearly everything that can be wrong with a human being is the result of energy blockage of some kind. If physical energy is not able to achieve its proper circulation in the body, the individual is physically sick. If there is anything to interfere with the proper circulation of psychical energy, the individual is psychically sick. If anything interferes with or impairs the circulation of mental energy, the individual is mentally sick. And wherever these processes are impaired, a series of dramatic situations result. You realize that nature, in building up sequentially and in perfect pattern this pyramid of unfolding energy factors, has achieved and must maintain a certain kind of momentum. That this process of building always brings life to a new level of insecurity. There can be no security until ultimate security is attained. And wherever energy, in its manifestation, is unable to advance its own specializations, there comes a very serious crisis in the development and unfoldment of living things. So we now have to proceed for a moment from the opposite pole of this. Energy building upward is creating in space, by means of the seminal energies of space, a series of forms. The Gnostics were well aware of this concept of emanational reflex. Forms rising out of matter to become the instruments of energy. As energy unfolds, forms must unfold to receive this energy. and the balance of the universe is maintained by a series of positive and negative reactions. That for every energy, there must be a receptacle. That for every energy that is specialized or released, there must be an instrument of manifestation. That the instruments or the bodily factors or the structural factors must unfold with the unfolding of the causal energy itself. In man, the bodily unfoldment implies now not only physical establishment by generation, vital maintenance, emotional equilibrium, and mental advancement. All of these must work together so that the total pattern of man is available for the manifestation of a certain condition of energy. If any of this complex machinery goes out of order, then energy moving into manifestation moves in without the full cooperation of the instrument in which it is manifesting. This lack of cooperation is known as conflict. And wherever this conflict exists, energy moves against energy rather than with it, because it is the inevitable of energy that it shall overcome and overthrow all barriers to the progress of itself. If a dam, therefore, is put across the natural growth of the individual at any point, energy will ultimately destroy that dam. And if the individual has foolishly built his house at the foot of the dam, assuming that this dam will hold, he will be swept away by the natural energy of life itself. Thus, the growth of the human personality through infancy, childhood, adolescence, and maturity represents a recapitulation in structural development of the principal steps by means of which energy has achieved the integration of the human personality. An energy moving in upon this, if it is frustrated, if it is blocked, is unable to achieve its natural and inevitable purposes through that organism. Now, one of the things that is always the enemy of energy in all structures is crystallization. Crystallization in the body blocks certain types of energy. Crystallization in the emotions will block another type. Crystallization in the mind will block still another type. So the crystallizations of various kinds, among which we may mentally note such things as opinions and fixations, these will block the natural flow of energy, or prevent this energy from achieving its own purpose, namely its own freedom through the personality. The energy that is in the individual has no particular intention of staying there. It doesn't necessarily stay there even for a moment. A study of the magnetic field of the human body shows that energy is pouring from it continuously. And this energy can all move out in many ways. It can move out physically. For each human body or any other form that it creates is a microcosm of itself. And man, as an energy field, is continually contributing to the energy of lesser things. Energy is moving out of him and through him. Just as his physical energy, therefore, becomes part of the physical availability of energy, so his emotional energy is part of the available store of beauty, of love, of nobility, of fineness, which is developing in the world. His mental energy flows out as the wisdom of life, contributing to the improvement of all human beings of this generation and all generations past and to come. Thus, energy, through the personality of man, is being continually transformed into utilities. Certain phases of it. But the mainstream, of course, continues to protect itself insofar as it can by ensuring that there will be new channels for this energy, and that this energy will therefore continue to radiate from a center which is everywhere to a circumference that is nowhere. Infinite manifestation. Wherever the individual comes into conflict with the natural motion of energy, he is delaying the second prong of the process of evolution. For evolution is not merely life ideating. Evolution is form ascending to meet life, represented in Eastern philosophy by the spiral in the conch shell, and of the very beautiful poem, "Build More Noble Mansions, O My Soul." The noble mansions, the better houses, are being built from one level of energy, carrying the individual upward to a certain point, where these are ensouled by another kind of energy. What appears to be definite is that this energy itself, being, as we said, a series of ripples, that this energy is moving for its fulfillment upon several levels, even as man is. Now, man's physical energy is of great value to him in many things. He does not have to be a mental giant in order to use it. In fact, he hasn't to have an idea of any kind. He can work for somebody else who has one. He can simply chop wood. He can plow the ground. He can perform labor by energy alone. And today we even regard energy of that kind as worth about $4 to $6 an hour. It's gotten to be more valuable than it used to be. Therefore, physical energy is necessary for the maintenance of an organization by which we are in this world at this time. And being in this world at this time is essentially and evidently part of the archetypal purpose of energy. Some energy goes into clear space, into orders of life we know nothing about. But some energy follows along what we term biological lines and produces creatures such as we know and see. But whether this energy is perfecting the magnetic field of a planet or animating creatures, it is fulfilling one of its innumerable purposes. And one of these innumerable purposes, as far as we are able to observe, is the maintenance of a physical structure by means of which man can release, by internal chemistry, a series of superphysical attributes. Thus, man builds a complicated nervous system. He develops organs and structures. He develops a brain. He develops a central and a sympathetic or autonomic nervous reflex system. These things are not necessary, essentially, to his survival, but they are necessary to his function, to his existence as a dynamic living thing. And at the stage of the unfoldment of energy which man has achieved, energy requires this complicated structure which we know as essential and proper to its purpose. Why it does so, we can only say, rests in the will of the energy itself. But we are assuming again that the ultimate purpose of all energy is freedom, and freedom is the complete expression of itself. Now, man having achieved, therefore, the structural development by means of a certain kind of energy, at various periods creates centers within himself by means of which further energies may be liberated in him or through him. This is very much like the process of tuning in a series of stations on a radio or a television. Depending upon the quality of the instrument and upon the adequacy of the aerial, various stations can be tuned in, whereas a neighbor with a poorer instrument may not be so fortunate. But whenever we tune in to a level of energy, we get a program. And that is one of our troubles in most instances. But what might we say would be the first and most important tuning in of energy? Apparently, the great principle of energy as itself moves and makes one essential polarization in the life of developing man. And that is that the energy as form builder, energy as the animator of form, is able to move in when the prenatal structure of the body reaches the degree of growth in which it is able to tune in the energy stream. Prior to that time, the energy has been provided by the parental energy fields. But at what time that we call the quickening, the individual becomes a direct avenue for the release of energy, physical energy. From that time on, energy begins the process of enlivening the form. The energy was there all the time, but part of the process of generation is to build in a degree of organization by which the positive pole of energy can move in. Up to that time, the structure is sustained only by the negative pole of energy, which is the negative field supplied by the evolving substances of life, which we call matter, which have their own energies, but which energies are not capable of carrying a life beyond a certain point, but they are capable of creating a certain level of organization which then can be vitalized or taken over. And all the processes that we know in growth consist of levels of energy taking over through structures capable of sustaining them. And the structure, as it develops, passes through a series of distinct phases or conditions. At a certain time, the principle of growth takes over. This is due to the exhaustion of certain endocrine secretion in the infant. Later, the process of emotional intensification takes over from the energy field. Later, the mental process takes over, producing the major divisions of childhood, adolescence, and maturity. Each case, however, the energy does not drive the bargain. The energy, being everywhere, always, is simply tuned in by the evolving organism. As the structure advances, the organism is able to accept what the Greeks would term an ensoulment by energy. Now remember, this isn't blind energy we're talking about. This is energy which is capable of releasing any degree of consciousness that the organism is capable of sustaining. So when the individual reaches maturity, he achieves this end as a human being by being capable of receiving into himself and transforming and ultimately transmitting that degree of conscious energy which we call selfhood or egoism or the I am-ness in man. As Buddha pointed out, this is by no means the end, but it is as far as man can normally accomplish. The body which has been built, therefore, becomes the instrument of this conscious energy principle. Now, the energy descending through infinite specialization has produced orders of life between itself and man, which are not visible to man. Energy coming in as consciousness is not merely a mass, a substance. Energy coming in as consciousness is already a highly conditioned existence. And we have every reason to suspect, therefore, the essential validity of the Vedantic and yogic positions on this. Namely, that consciousness, the atmic nature of life, the true Atman, is identical with all others. That pure spirit, pure consciousness on the human level is identical and one with all other human consciousness on the same level. Therefore, that the I consciousness in each individual is shared by all, and that the appearance of individuality is due to the organism and not to the division in the principle itself. Therefore, one self manifesting through an infinite number of bodies becomes apparently an infinite number of selves. But this self principle, like all of the other causal agencies, is actually one substance. We therefore come to the very simple process that behind humanity as a level of consciousness, there is the human state of energy, which was the Anthropos, or the Adam Kadmon of the Kabbalah, the one man who became all men, the Manu of the ancient Indians. That within this one man, therefore, again, there is a series of differentiations. This one being differentiating into evolving individualities produces the so-called conscious beings that are embodied in form. But all of these conscious beings are themselves varying degrees of growing seed within the energy field. Thus, evolution is infinite life coming into infinite manifestation through forms passing through infinite modifications. And in this, then, we are not in conflict with the basic principle of heredity. We recognize that bodies belonging to a common reservoir of body have their own laws in the same way that mind belonging to a common reservoir of mind has its unique and peculiar laws. But we do know that the fulfillment of the plan for things must be that forms are forever meeting energies, growing to be ensouled by them, and that the continuous growth of life in its total spiritual, moral, intellectual, and physical status consists of this increasingly understanding partnership between form and energy. Without this partnership, life as we know it cannot develop. The cell is the instrument, therefore, by means of which the partnership between body and the degree of consciousness which body is able to manifest, that this partnership is made possible. And the infinite procedure by which this is achieved seems infinitely complicated to the scientific mind. But in nature itself, it is merely one of innumerable expressions of the same process, everywhere repeating itself, on all levels according to their need and their kind, and varying in no essential principle. This is why the old way of thinking is so vital, is that it has no exceptions, that it does not have to create a new solution for every problem. It recognizes only one essential problem in relation to man. And that is the possibility that man will not keep faith with the motion of energy through him. That man will not continue in the essential purposes for which he was intended. Now, here's where our moral question and our ethical question comes in. The human mind, being capable of a degree of what Aquinas calls self-determinism, therefore has a right, in a sense, to choose its purposes or choose its projects. The only way in which it can know with certainty whether it is right or wrong in its selection is the consequence. All amount of abstract contemplation in this is to a measure futile. The only way in which the individual can know whether a certain procedure is next for him is determined by what it does to him. It might be perfectly properly next for someone else, but might not be next for him. If what he is doing is next for him, the chemical compound of consequence will enlarge his participation in consciousness. More consciousness will move into him. More consciousness will find polar possibility in the structure which he has set up. If the individual, for example, centers his entire life upon the development of body, he, by this determinism of his own, may neglect those processes by means of which the consciousness quotient can be increased. Now, this consciousness quotient is important. Now, let us take, for example, an individual who has decided that he is going to be a great athlete. He is going to limit his development and his consciousness largely to the improvement of his body. He is going to be primarily a physical person. By this concentration of energy, he changes the total compound of his nature. Actually, he has caused something to grow. Some part of himself is a little more or a little better than it was. He has devoted his time and his thought to learning all that he could about physical culture. Therefore, he has become able to do certain things and to achieve certain ends not previously attainable. But here is his difficulty. He has enriched the compound a little, but he has not enriched the instrument to control it. Therefore, he is in a problem. He has added something to the total nature of himself without adding the control factors. The control factors, in all cases, being the power to enlarge consciousness to meet the demand of function. A new function demands new governorship, a new degree of unfoldment. Maybe very slight, but it still is never sufficient. So the individual, in all of his specialized activities, outgrows his total insight and then falls into emergency. The only answer to this is that there must be more release of energy as consciousness, or energy as thought, or energy as feeling, to control the ramifications of the applications of energy to the physical or environmental structure of the individual. Because after all, energy is working for release and knows the way it wants to go. And that which delays or inhibits the total release becomes an obstacle to the energy. Obviously, if the obstacle becomes too great, the energy is unable to function or breaks through, damages structure, and may ultimately result in the sterilization of that organism, which no longer continues. But this has nothing to do with the life. The life goes on. Because life, consciousness, intelligence belong to one level, and energy in physical structure belongs to another. And our student of the cellular processes is dealing totally with that form of energy which is used in form building. We are thinking in philosophy more of that form of energy which is used in character building. But the same processes go on. Thoughts are generated like bodies. That is why the brain is so constituted that it is a generating structure. Thus, in all of these fields of activity, what we might term progress, essential progress, true progress, is this continual adjustment between the radiant of energy emerging from its own source and the construction of the instruments for the expression of that energy in space. And where there is any interference with this process, we have danger that energy will be defeated in an instrument or in a vehicle or in a time or in a place or in a nation or in a race. And that which is defeated, where energy is defeated, it simply deserts the organism. And this is true of all forms of progress. Buddhism recognizes this, recognizes the chemical constitution of the consciousness unit, and that this consciousness unit in man is, as far as man himself is concerned, the knower. And the end and purpose of the knower is that the knower shall know truth. And the reason that it must know truth is because it is only when it knows that it can cooperate completely. And it is only when it possesses this inward understanding that it can become the clear channel for the release of purpose itself, which is resident in energy as absolute consciousness. Consequently, the highest wisdom among all great philosophical systems has been the wisdom that causes man to understand the divine nature and obey it. And whether we say divine nature or we say energy, we must still keep its laws. And the problem of modern man is this problem of being sidetracked, so that instead of man unfolding, he simply goes on a level. He simply continues, but does not grow. And when anything continues without growing, it must die. Because continuance in nature is only maintained by the continual unfoldment of instruments, so that the end achieved may always be worthy of the great means which were used to achieve it. Consequently, we say this, and I think it will ultimately be scientifically demonstrated, that heredity is not the answer to the consciousness allotment of any individual, that such an explanation is unnecessary and contrary to the evidence of life around us, that what we call heredity is simply the individual's uses of available materials, and that as this body develops, when it actually reaches its majority, it overwhelms its heredity and takes control of the situation itself. The only reason why this is not true, or need not be true in every instance, is because in spite of the passing of years, a large part of mankind never reaches maturity. Maturity is therefore not to be measured by years, but maturity is the attainment of a degree of consciousness release which is superior to that release bestowed by heredity. When the individual is able to excel that which has gone before, he is free from it and possesses the power of his own individual integration. In this way, I think we can get a broader picture, a larger concept of what constitutes the coming into life of the human being. that the machinery of generation is a wonderful and extraordinary thing, but that the purpose of this machinery is not the perpetuation of species, primarily. The purpose of it is the continual unfolding of forms to become instruments for the release of life. And it is this one life itself that ensouls forms. And this life is conscious. And in universal things, it is universally conscious. In individual things, it is individually conscious. In collective things, it is collectively conscious. And in total case of isolation, it has the peculiar consciousness of aloneness. But these are aspects provided by the instrument into which it enters. And the purpose of the entire project is that these instruments shall forever improve or be better to the ultimate condition in which forms as forms, by constant improvement, become less formal and more like energy, until in the end they are energy. And this ultimate identity of energy, energy growing up and energy descending, the ultimate identity of these two is absolute consciousness in all things, everywhere. Beyond this point, we cannot conceive. But it is obvious that the end which nature is striving to achieve is that man shall continually outgrow himself. For by outgrowing what he was, he outgrows the energy part or the energy allotment which was his. And by this circumstance, attunes in to a greater energy allotment. This is the search for security, the search for peace, the search for life. And the individual who directs his attention to the unfoldment of those powers by which his superior energies are channeled becomes more suitable, more useful, more happy than the person who, turning his attention from these essentials, mistaking the purposes of the body for those of universal energy. This person fails, has already produced adequate animal forms to achieve the purpose. And when man, ceasing to be himself, retires to an animal state, he is not even an animal, because many of his energy elements have already exceeded this state. Therefore, he is a kind of hybrid. He is a creature in which no value is clearly indicated. And unless nature is able to correct this condition, this type of thing becomes sterile. It is no longer suitable for the purposes for which it was intended. If we think in this larger way, I believe the processes of generation will become increasingly clear. And we shall realize, as Lao Tzu gives us in the Doctrine of Tao, the nature of this one power by which all things are sustained, which takes all shapes in all forms, yet is in itself shapeless, that it becomes all things to all beings, but remains forever itself, and that man, through the processes of growth, finally becomes aware of the sovereignty of this fact and moves from a creature sustained to a creature sustaining, or by voluntary effort, accomplishes the alchemical mystery of perfecting nature through art, and by the consecration or dedication of his own consciousness, fulfills what the mystics of all time have taught and hoped for. This, in its turn, is a new birth upon a new level, and the processes of generation still continue. But they continue in their primary purpose, which is that the infinite itself shall become completely manifested through all parts of its own nature, releasing its power to every creature, just as human consciousness through the nervous system is distributed throughout the body of man. Through these studies, I believe we can get a better orientation on what might be termed the processes of human generation. Time's up.